This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 566 of the Dressage Radio Show, official podcast of the United States Dressage Federation on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, Total Saddle Fit, and Bait Saddles. On tonight's show, we are joined by a couple of Canadians. First, we have Brittany Fraser-Beaulieu, top Grand Prix competitor, and then Christelotte Boylan, recipient of Equine Canada's Lifetime Achievement Award. After that, we will have a discussion with biomechanics coach Dave Thind and competitor Charlotte Jorce.
This is Reese Koffler-Stanfield from Georgetown, Kentucky.
And this is Philip Parks from Rockwood, Ontario, and you're listening to the Dressage Radio Show.
Hi,
That was a little bit of a tricky intro because we've got a little bit of French in there, a little bit of German in there, and a little bit of Charlotte's Danish or Swedish?
Yep, that's why I let you do that one, not going to lie. Danish,
yeah. So,
I'm glad that's your part. Yeah.
I'm sorry to anybody who's ever come on the show and we've messed up their name.
I usually let Phil do the hard names just because I bow out early and Phil gives it a good old college try. So, no, but we have a great show. I mean, one of the benefits, and we all are benefiting from this, is right now we're able to get some really cool people on the show who, you know, normally would be out competing or coaching. And it's that's been a bonus. I know all of us are trying to look at the bonuses on everything, but how are you doing?
The normally crazy busy people are not so crazy busy.
Yeah, and we can get them.
We can talk to them, and we can bring you some good interviews, and that's kind of fun.
Yeah, I love it. So how's your week been, Phil? What have you been up to?
I am doing some riding.
Yes,
just kind of easing back into it, getting the horses a little bit, you know, thinking about their fitness and how, you know, I can't just jump on and go all gung-ho.
Right. Because they had how many weeks off, though?
A few, at least. Four, maybe? Yeah, four. Anyways, it depends on the horse. Some of the horses are being kept going by their owners, so, which is great that they've been able to do a little bit of riding, but others have been completely off. So we're all at different stages at the moment.
Yeah, sure.
And that's great.
I think.
And one of the big bonuses is that I'm not too much out of shape.
How's it going?
We've been doing the dressage rider training.
Yeah, how's week three? We're on week three. How is it going for you?
Well, week one and two were a little tough because it was sort of an adjustment to, you know, what is this all about? Why can't I do a squat? These kinds of things. Yeah. Now, week three, I've discovered that the core workout is murder. It's horrible.
I'm honestly did mine last night and then I'm sitting here. I'm like, my abs are still hurting.
Like, what is this about? Like, I thought we'd have a little bit more of a gradual ramp up, whatever. And Nicola's like, okay, and then we're going to do this. And then we're going to do this. And I was like,
I was saying some bad words in my tack room. Yeah, not going to lie.
I pause her. I take a break.
Yeah. So my abs hurt.
That 20 minute workout.
I'm putting we can kill you.
Air quotes, because that's not a 20 minute workout. That was like 40.
It was
like,
tough.
I had to take breaks, multiple breaks. But on the other hand, the strength was a little bit not as hard. And
I've not done the strength, but I did the yoga, and the yoga is good this week. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you get a night. Yeah. You get a night. I like a good flow.
Yeah, that was a good flow. A good yoga. So if you guys don't know what we're talking about, I hope we're loving hearing from people that are doing it. I have one student that she texts me every workout, and it's hilarious. I can't stop laughing whenever I get the text. Also, the core, she was not happy with me. She's like, I am not sitting the trot this weekend in my lesson. It's like, okay, great. But it's fun. So what we're talking about, if you haven't heard, as a community, we're doing the Dressage Rider Training Program with Nicola Smith, and we hope you guys are enjoying it. Shout out to Nancy Jones. She is so cute. She always sends us texts on how she's doing and email shout outs. We love them. So keep them coming. It's definitely, we laugh when we get them because we're feeling the same thing in what's so great about the program is you can be at all levels, and she gives you all kinds. But I'm like, I can do the highest level. I've been, you know, done this before. Oh no, I was the same. I was like crying yesterday.
Yeah, in my like, core workout. I mean, because I think we're both kind of fiercely competitive, and like, yeah. Okay, we're gonna go do it. And then it's like, that was a mistake.
We'll I'm laughing at it. It's kind of hurting my abs. Not gonna laugh. It's been great. So yeah, we have also same thing here. You know, again, everyone's at sort of a varying level of fitness and stages. Our competitions in the U.S. open June 1st. If you have a chance, take a look at the USCF protocols. They're extensive for competitions. So I have some students that are going the first weekend in June. I personally am not. I'm going to hang back until I feel like travel's a little bit more normal. But again, everyone has different levels of comfort. So we're definitely doing that. So we're getting ready for some shows and some fun things that are starting to happen. So whatever you're up to, we hope you're doing well and trying to keep a positive spin all this.
And be safe.
Be safe. And really think about it. I think the USCF, they came out with some things and really basically, if you're not comfortable, don't go. It's okay. Don't go. And it's just a horse show at that point, and that's fine. But I feel like I've got to tell you, Phil knows my sister really well, and my sister comes and helps me. My sister, Lindsay, shout out to my sister. She and I grew up riding together. She also rides Grand Prix. And so she's my eyes on the ground here. And she came to see Big Mike, and I was a little bit nervous because I've been like kind of hounding the basics. And I'm like, oh, I really want to see how we're doing. And my sister actually complimented me on how my basics were. And I almost cried a little. It was great. Because I've been really struggling.
Stuck in the house for a while too.
Yeah, I think she was stuck in the house. Like Phil would never have complimented. No, I don't want to say that. You do compliment. But I was really happy. And so that was like a little quarantine victory for me
gold star.
I was like, yes, I've been working really hard at this, and Lindsay was really cute and really complimentary, so that was fun. So we hope you all are working on your basics and trying to get that much better. I'm trying to get Big Mike ready for Pre-St. George, so really big jump in his life, and I think tomorrow I may even try a shred belly so he gets used to that just for fun. Why not? So
all right,
pretty fun.
Sounds great.
Well, we have a great show. We're going to get started. We have a lot of Canadians. Phil, you've been working hard on this, and it's fantastic we've gotten them. So we're going to come back with right after this commercial break from Bates Saddlery with Brittany Fraser-Beaulieu. And she was going to tell us about her journey this year, getting back from having her baby and getting ready for the Olympics that will be next year.
Bates Saddles offer highly specialized saddles for every discipline, engineered to bring out the best in you and your horse. Underneath the finest European leather, you will feel the power of innovation. For you, the rider, enjoy instantaneous comfort, optimal balance, and seamless contact with your horse, leaving you free to concentrate on your aids. For your horse, the Care Cushion System and Easy Change Fit Solution ensure the absolute comfort and your peace of mind. Revolutionize your riding experience and fulfill your true potential by riding in a Bates saddle. See your local retailer for a test ride or visit batessaddles.com to find out more. That's batessaddles.com.
Well, tonight we are so happy to have Canadian rider Brittany Fraser-Beaulieu. She was part of the WEG team in 2018. She was the highest scoring Canadian. She was the silver medalist at the Pan Am Games in 2015. And I was there. I saw it. Brittany, I have to tell you, I'm so excited to have you on the show tonight.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be on the show.
Yes, I have been a fan of your horse. He is just wonderful. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Yes, it's been a long partnership with Alan and I. My father and I purchased him at an auction in Holland called Equine Elite Auction when he was 5 years old. He was very big and powerful when I tried him, and I just love the feeling that I had when I sat on and picked up Trot and Canter. I felt like I was on a rocket ship. So, we started off at the very beginning, could barely steer, walked trot, canter, total basics. And I was working with my trainers and he just brought me to the top of the sport. And I'm so thankful for him and that he has come into my life, and him and I have an incredible partnership together. He's really like my first child.
I bet.
We've traveled all over the world. He's brought me to the top of the sport. He's made me see the world. We competed in Aachen, which was a huge dream of mine. To be able to canter down Centerline at such a famous show was an amazing experience.
Now, Brittany, do you ever wish he was just a little smaller? How big is he? He's enormous.
Yes, he's pushing 18 hands.
That's way big. Yeah,
it's very big, but I will say he's extremely comfortable, so that's a plus. I'm so used to riding him now that sometimes I don't even realize how big, or I forget how big he is. But I will say, after I had my baby and I had some time off, and my core strength was non-existent, I realized how powerful and big he was, because I really struggled for a little while to get back.
So Brittany, tell us, you had a baby, right? You missed the Pan Am Games, right? Because you had an adorable little one. So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, that's a huge challenge for all of us, and we're all kind of facing a little time off right now. Not scheduled. Tell us a little bit about like how you came back after a baby and what that meant. That was amazing.
So I was very fortunate actually to be able to compete as much as I did when I was pregnant. My pregnancy was pretty straightforward, so I was very fortunate for that. Coming back, I felt like I was ready 2 weeks after I had my son. But my husband and mother pretty much had to hold me in the house and said, absolutely not, you're not getting on yet. But on week three, I convinced them that I was fine. And, I didn't realize, I don't think you realize it until you're put in that situation. But I told myself, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to trot. And I took one trot step and I was like, whoa, I am not ready. So I actually had a lot easier time riding a few of my students' horses because they were smaller movers and smaller animals and a little bit easier to put together. So I tried to get my fitness back on those horses, but I will remember being in the arena sitting trot, being like, oh my gosh, my abs are on fire. It was some days I'm like, oh, I need to take a break. So it was a challenge, but I was so determined because I wanted to compete at Devon. And that was at the end of September. And I had my son in the middle of June. I was so determined to get back into shape because I missed competing so much. I love competing. And I told myself I am going to be somewhat fit to go back and ride Grand Prix at that show. So, were my abs there? No, they weren't.
Girl, you're a boss though. That's huge.
I survived.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. That is so cool. So tell us, you came back, you're ready for Devon. I have to be honest, I don't even know what day it is. So tell us, you were ready for going for Tokyo, right? You were right now the leading Canadian, like, to kind of talk us through sort of your Florida season and getting ready for Tokyo.
Okay. So after Devon, I took all in back to Montreal because that's where I'm living right now, and started preparing him for the Florida season. I actually went to Wellington a little bit earlier last year because I wanted to, get back into a training method with Ashley Holzer, my coach. We did a little bit of Pixio at home before Devon, but really for training with the Olympics, I needed to be with her more on a consistent basis, actually, especially having time off from, after my baby, I gave all in a little bit of time off and I, with my fitness level too. So we ended up going to Florida in November. And I wanted to do a national show in December just to kind of, you know, get all the rust out and just to get back down Centerline. So I ended up doing that. And then I started right in the season, the first show in January. I had a little bit of a few rusty moments, I'm not going to lie. you know, just with the stress of, with all of, because with our criteria, all of our scores count, we can drop one score, but it's an average based off of your whole competition season. So after I got the rust down, my scores, you know, kept getting bigger and bigger, and I felt like I had a completely different horse under me. You know, he is 15, so he's a seasoned Grand Prix horse. He's been all over the world, so, and he loves to compete. Like, I trot him down that side of global, and he's like, okay, let's go. So I love that about him, especially in the freestyle at night. He gets pretty hot, so it's actually so much fun. But I ended up at the end of the season, well, the last show was the Nations Cup. Owen and I have been on many Nations Cup teams for Canada, but this one was a little bit extra special. I was on the team with a couple of really good friends of mine. We ended up winning the silver medal, and on the freestyle night, I had a personal best at 78.7, I think it was.
That's a good one.
I got a bronze medal. So that was an individual bronze medal. So that was for us to end the season the way that everything ended. I couldn't have ended it on a better note. So after that, with all the with COVID-19 and everything, we decided to go home because I thought that that was best for my son. So we ended up coming back home, and Olin came back home a couple of weeks later. And now we're kind of sitting in limbo, wondering what's going to happen with COVID-19 and the pandemic and when the next horse show will be. But I was really crossing my fingers that Aachen might happen this year, but that just got canceled.
Yeah, so. They just canceled it. That's right. Yeah, this week, right? Yeah, so, they just canceled that. Yeah.
So it's a little bit hard to train at the moment, I find, and to make a plan because everything is so unknown. So I decided to just, you know, give Olin a little bit of a break again because he had such an amazing season. And for me right now, the most important thing is to keep him sound and healthy because he knows his job. And next summer is a long way away.
Yeah.
Maybe you can tell us, you know, when you were having your time off, what was Olin doing at that point? Was he off? Were you able to have somebody ride him for you a little bit, keep his fitness going?
So my last competition was in February at the 5-star where I won the 5-star. So that was a big career highlight.
That was really cool. You were pregnant too. It was amazing.
I was,
I told you I'm a fan girl.
Yeah.
Girl, I thought, wow, she's amazing. Cause your horse is an enormous trot. It's awesome.
I know. But the extra weight, I will say, was a bonus for me. In that moment. my trainer ended up riding him just through to the end of the season. Then I took him back and he enjoyed lots of time in the paddock. And then I took him home to Montreal in the middle of April. And he actually had a month off, maybe a month and a half off. He just went in the paddock and I just wanted to rest him and I couldn't ride anyways. And I actually bored at a good friend of mine, Naima Liberté's stable, and she was still in Florida. So I decided when she came back, she was going to start a backup for me. So when she came back to Montreal from training with Ashley, she started him again for me, which I'm very thankful for.
Okay, that's great. Yeah,
cool.
I was helping her up until she went to the Pan Ams because she came home for a little bit and then she left for the Pan Ams and I took over riding everybody again. So it was definitely a pretty amazing experience. The whole thing went very well for me and I'm fortunate.
Yeah.
So maybe you have a little insight to, you know, all the riders who are going to be able to get back to their barns and get back to riding their horses and trying to get fit. Is there any advice that you would give to all of us and the listeners here?
Well, I would say, you know, since we're all kind of cooped up at home, is to find a home workout that works for you and your body, and do it for 20 minutes at home. Get out and go for walks or go for runs outside to get some fresh air. I have a spin bike at home, so that's what kind of kept me motivated. But also I find the home workouts are good, and they, you know, as long as you work the muscle groups that riders need, and there's tons of workouts out there that you can find online to keep you fit.
Yeah, no, I think that's such a good thing, and to stay fit and to stay healthy. And I think we all of us are doing that. Yeah.
And I know a lot of people are like wanting to get back at the stable and ride their horses, and you know, it's a little bit of a challenge right now, but hopefully soon we will have.
Right. And it sounds like All In did great, right? It sounded like with actually a little bit of time off. Yeah. I don't think the horses really care, right? I think they're happy to have a little time.
I don't think they care, you know. Expenses horses that are, I think it's important that horses keep moving. Sitting in the stall, I'm not a fan of. You know, in my opinion, horses need to go outside. They have to be horses. So I think that even when I wasn't pregnant, I always gave my horses an All-In, especially because he does well with it, a few weeks off, a few times a year. Yeah. Just to kind of rest his legs and rest his body and then pick him back up again. And usually went better for me after I did that.
Yeah, I think it's like a holiday, right? Like just when we go on holiday, you come back and you just feel a little fresher and a little just, you know, ready to kind of go back to work. And that's a good thing.
It's just sometimes the young horses use that to their advantage.
Yeah, exactly. Like it depends on the horse, yeah, right? But your older guys, I think, and gals, they like a little time off. Well, Brittany, we can't thank you enough. And like I said, I'm going to fangirl you all the way to Tokyo next year. Girl, I'm going to be watching. We hope we can have you back on in a year. It'll just a little pause and we'll have you back on and be cheering you on toward Tokyo. So how can our listeners find you online if they have any more questions for you?
I have a website, www.fbequestrian.com. You can follow me on Instagram, Brittany Beaulieu 10, and on Facebook, Brittany Fraser Beaulieu.
Fantastic. Well, good luck and give that baby a kiss for us. So cute.
I will. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, right after this commercial break from Kentucky Performance Products, we're going to come back with Christelette Boylan.
Vitamin E is a powerful antioxidant that supports healthy muscle and nerve function by limiting cellular damage. Green grass is the best source of vitamin E for horses, but most horses don't spend enough time grazing to meet their needs. Hay, grain, and winter pasture provide little to no natural vitamin E. To ensure your horse's vitamin E requirements are met, choose Elevate. Elevate contains a readily available source of natural vitamin E. Elevate is cost-effective and easy to feed. To learn more about Elevate, visit the Kentucky Performance Products website at kppusa.com.
Well, tonight it's truly our pleasure to have Christelette Boylan on the show. She is the recipient of Equine Canada's Lifetime Achievement Award, a 7-time Olympian, a 3-time individual Pan Am Gold medalist, and part founder of the Canadian Dressage Owner and Rider Association. Christelette, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I enjoy being here.
Well, tell us in this global pandemic quarantine, what have you been up to?
When I left Florida, I, of course, crossed the border and immediately went into this total isolation for 2 weeks. My daughter was dropping off food at the door. My horse, me, and my daughter in one empty barn and apartment. It was really quite different, very quiet, and I kind of enjoyed it.
so now you're out and you're busy again, right?
Yes, Now I've moved to my normal location for the summer in Ontario to Sterling Hill Farm, and now things are getting back to normal. But I have to say those 2 weeks, 4 weeks actually it turned out to be, was very interesting in mono because I decided to break from any kind of dressage routine. And the mare and I really got to grips with working the hills and going up and down and going out in all kinds of weather. And yeah, it was very insightful and I think very good for her.
Oh, that sounds fun, except for the fact that it's been snowing up here in Canada. Yes. The rest of that sounds pretty good.
We went out. Yeah, and I forgot to say, we also started adding cavalletti and some jumping, anything to break the routine completely from what she normally did. And certainly it was a shock coming out of Florida. I was just so happy she stayed healthy and didn't catch a cold because the temperature drop within days was incredible, from 30 plus to, yeah, you know what was happening up here.
Yeah, I think
minus
that,
three.
Like at nights. Yeah. It's been
the barn,
quite cold.
Because she was the only horse in the barn, was cold. But everything went well.
Good. So we thought we'd have you on just to give a little talk about your storied career. I mean, 7 Olympics and all those Pan Ams. Yeah. Maybe we could begin a little bit at the beginning. Like, how did you get started with riding and started with dressage?
Well, I'd known forever that I wanted to ride. It took me from the age of 3 to 10 to convince my parents. And that only happened because I made my own money on a TV show, a children's TV show. I got a part that was just went on and on and on. So I had quite a good little bank account going. And I finally fulfilled all the things they told me I had to do. And then I said, and now you have to deliver on the horse. So around the age of 10, I started with the Toronto North York Pony Club and began that long equestrian road, which I have enjoyed all the way through, I must say.
So, okay, 10 years old, you started riding, but weren't you qualified for the Olympics like 8 years after that?
17. Yeah.
Yeah, 7 years after that. I mean, yeah. That's how did that all come together?
Because I started with Pony Club, and they, of course, are based on the 3-day system. So we did dressage, we did eventing a little bit, and we did stadium jumping. And he wasn't my first horse, but I think I had him by the time I was 11, was Bonner. He was a racetrack reject, and he was going to kill me over the jumps. Because he is, in jumping terms, used to hang his legs, which meant when it came to the little 3-day event, I had turned over a few times. So slowly but surely, we generated more and more into the dressage scene. And by the way, even at the small events, he was always winning the dressage and always almost killing us both over the jumps. So came quite obvious what direction we were going to do and take. And my mother made one decision very early in my career. At the age of 14, she sent me to Germany to train with this horse. That was unheard of at that time. It was so early. But she had a dance background. She was very much into, if you're going to do this, do it right, do it full time. And so there I was. And that's the reason it became a possibility for me to be ready for the Olympics, although I knew when I got to Tokyo that I was not ready for an Olympic Games in that sense. But I had finished the qualifications. I even then said to myself, this is a great learning experience. And that's what it turned out to be.
That's incredible. So maybe tell us, like, what was your favorite Olympics, I guess, so far? And maybe a little bit of, like, your best competitions.
Okay, 1968 Mexico, because I think that was the very last Olympic Games that had no terrible breakdowns in events, and the security hadn't become such that the games are really quite a difficult thing to carry off for everybody, for the athletes, for the organizers. It must be nightmarish to think of the things that could happen. And if all occurred in 1972, I was there, I felt it, I saw it when the massacre happened in the Olympic Village and the Israeli athletes were taken out. So that was the beginning of the end of the Olympic, fun Olympics. That was 68. 72 had the problem in Munich. And since then, 76, the next Olympic Games I enjoyed really was Los Angeles, but there was still a lot of criteria there to get around. And the following games, whether it was Athens, where I was only coaching, or 76 Montreal, was completely covered in what we've become used to now, which is the unbelievable checking in and out, like as if you're at an airport.
Yeah, that's incredible. So that's know the history.
The side that, you know, you're not so aware of, but it makes the Olympics a very daunting thing. It's not like in Mexico was the last time you could kind of go to any event you wanted, sit down in the grass outside the stadium, and nobody came after you to move or do anything. But those times are gone. The most important events,
or maybe you're just your favorite competition to go to. You know, a lot of people say that Aachen is their most amazing place. Or, you know, tell us a little bit about
without any doubt, an incredible event, huge, unbelievable from every aspect, whether it's shopping or watching events. And seeing many, many, many different kinds of events. But if I had to choose my most favorite dressage show over the years, I'm not sure that they aren't stopping it now, is the Swarovski dressage event that was held in Austria every year. It was a CDI. It was 4-star. It was small. It was beautifully done by the family Swarovski themselves, and it had fast taste and fitness. It, with the background of the Alps, like it could have been a postcard. And to ride in that environment was just a pleasure.
Yes, yes, I've heard that one as well. It's been people's favorite to go to. So maybe we can switch it up from competitions to you know, your coaches and your teachers over the years, because you've been had the opportunity to ride under many of the German masters. So maybe you could just tell us a little bit about, you know, your best coaches or your most influential coaches, you know.
Yeah, that's a better word, because I think all of us, whether it's you with your riding or me with my riding, it's a journey. It's a long, long journey. And you take some bits from here and some bits from there. And there, of course, there are the teachers that have influenced you over time, and because they resonate a note with you, because I think people learn slightly differently. Some need to watch, some need to feel, some need to have it theoretically told to them. And so you are going to resonate with a certain teacher better because he hits certain chords with you. But for me, definitely, the two biggest contributors to my classic system, understanding the classic dressage system, was definitely Schultheis, number one. And I stayed with my coaches also. I'm not a great fan of people who flip coaches every 6 months or 2 years or whatever, because I don't think you get to the nitty gritty that quickly. You also have to have experienced a few horses through their development with the coach to understand the system. So I would say Schultheis, definitely 8 years, and George Teodorescu, 8 years. And George still used to come when I moved to Germany. I stayed in Germany for 23 years. I was coached then. I was eyes on the ground for him, and he was eyes on the ground for me, was Udo Lange. But even during those times, George would sometimes drive down from his farm in Germany and give us 2 or 3 days over a weekend. So I never lost the contact to those coaches. I went to visit Schulteis until he died. So there's a long history behind those special legends.
Yeah, they were legends. So now I want to hear a little bit about the horses in your career. You know, who were the most? What were the horses that influenced you most, or that you can remember the best?
Horse wise, again, this was the influence of Schulteis. Bonner was the first horse who introduced me. He was really kind of a lucky horse for me because, with his start on the racetrack and everything, he could have been just a mess. And he did get me to 2 Olympic Games. I knew early on he wasn't the superstar or even a horse that could be in the top third of an Olympic Games. But at that time, I didn't have the knowledge and the finesse either. So he still did a wonderful job. Armagnac was very important. I got him through Mr. Schulteis. He took me to the 72 games and he put me in the top 12. And Gaspano was a very special horse to me. He went to 1976 Olympics. And by then I was actively able to be looking for horses myself. And with help, I had been able to secure a horse called Gaspano. He was shortlisted for the U.S. team the year before. And then the owner had a falling out with the U.S. and I managed to put a deal together for Gaspano, which is much too long to get involved in here, but was for me a breaking stone because I didn't pay for the horse. I had to train 3 other horses for the lady and put a package together that way. But I've never been a person who had the kind of sponsor who just walked in and said, well, here's $1.5 million, just go get a horse, you know? So yeah. For me, it was important to have been, to put that deal together for Gaspano, and Gaspano shot up to 6th place in the Grand Prix. So for me, that was a major breakthrough. Then comes Beraldo, who I produced. He was small tour when I got him. I got him to Grand Prix. I trained him for a wonderful owner who was Belgium Dutch. And he took me to the 92 Olympics in Barcelona. And this horse was actually a year too young for the Olympics. He made the top 12 in Barcelona, but he really shone in 1993. Unfortunately, part of the deal was when I got him trained and he showed at the Olympics, he would go on sale the following year. And at the end of the 93 season, he was sold. For the first time, this horse had an incredible career. He was sold for over $1 million 3 times in his career. But Beraldo also made the top 12 in Barcelona. So for me, it may not be that I have never had a full out superstar and I've never gone out and paid that kind of money for a horse or had anybody do that, but I have consistently been able to put horses to the Olympic Games and get a very good job done. And I'm
so all right. So now I want to ask you, what are you looking for in a horse when you go out and, you know, when you have maybe a more limited budget, and what do you think it takes for a horse to be successful in a dressage career?
I never look at the budget at all. Beraldo was brought to me, for example, by the owner. I was looking at him for a young rider that was training with me, a very wealthy young rider in Germany. And the father came, we flew to see the horse a couple of times, and I immediately had a nice rapport with this horse. And when they turned him down because he did not fulfill all the things they wanted in a betting, the owner came back to me and said, you got along with him really well. Would you like to take him on and train him? And that's when we sat down. I said, I'd love to. I thought the horse was really good. So we made a contract up and took Beraldo and rode him, showed him, got him ready for the Olympics, and the owner reached his goal of wanting to sell him at a super price after the Olympic Games. By then, we knew everything about him. And what had bothered those people when they vetted him, the fact that all the flexions were poor, turned out to be a very normal thing for this horse. There was never a sounder horse. Beraldo showed late into his 18s and 19s with three different riders and never with Lim. But he never got through a flexion test because he was just too sensitive. He didn't. The key should have been for those people to know, or something I know now, he had bad flexions on all four, not one leg.
Right. It was equal in all
the
flexions.
It was equal. So actually, if you know the horse then, which of course I was able, in all honesty, to say to people who came to me after the Barcelona Olympics, don't even bother coming if you're going to worry about the flexion tests completely. And that was the saving grace. Those are some things that a horseman has to know about their horse. And yeah. It was never lame. Never, never, never lame.
Interesting. Well, Chris Lott, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your current horse, Rocky Lane, that you've been riding for, I think, 3 years now.
Yes. I picked her up in the States. She was nicely bred, but I just went up on a whim. I was finished with my cancer treatments and had done basic medium stuff and bits and pieces of national classes in the U.S. And I thought this would be a lovely project. She was exactly the type I like. She is not heavy, 16.3, about perfect size for me, vetted out nicely. And so I thought it's about time I take a project on. And it forced me also out of the doldrums of chemotherapy, and it forced me to get back to work physically also, which is what you need to do, I think. At least I had a great longing to do it and get back. And this horse has helped. She has a wonderful character. She was not scary in any sense at all. She can be strong, but she would never shy, turn around, dump you, or, you know, do any of the things that a roguish horse would do. And therefore we got on with it. I found a lot of basic stuff that I really had to go back and correct. And I'm still discovering things with her every day. But now she's a Grand Prix horse. She's fully trained. She can go through a Grand Prix test, a Grand Prix special. And now it's a matter of refining or finding the next rider, because my God, I do have to think about retiring from the show ring or from international competition. And I'm not sure that I really have the capacity to keep an FEI level horse just on the whim of, because I like to ride her every day. But that's the case, you know? But we'll
I think you have to have something to ride every day, but yeah, maybe not a international superstar.
A fully trained Grand Prix horse.
No.
So
I think that's my life goal myself. I think that sounds amazing. Just saying. It's like, it sounds great.
Yeah, it is wonderful. But on the other hand, it's also my way of making money and so on. So if the right thing came along, I would love to see her go to a rider who could go on with her.
So I also want to talk a little bit about your success as a coach. And, you know, you've coached many Canadians and I think not as aware, but in Germany doing a lot of coaching. So maybe you could just tell us, like, what do you enjoy about that? You know, what does that bring to to your life and your feelings about it?
I've always loved teaching, and kind of was something I felt I had a gift to do. It started my mother's dance teacher. So rhythmically with the voice commands and so on. I listened to teaching a lot. And then, of course, this is where having spent time with people like Schultheis and George Teodorescu, and all the teachers I've had the luck to ride with, even if they were only clinics and whatever, you learn from all those experiences. And then I have a good, I think, for giving it back and trying to find which system works with which rider. And then I'm always very, very happy to watch the difficulties of a horse, try to solve them with the rider and go on with it. And that's a little bit a gift, I think, which has developed and which I love doing. So I loved having my own successes, obviously, but I enjoy watching my students do well just as much.
Awesome. And then you said you had spent 23 years in Germany, and then right. you moved back to Canada. And I moved
directly to Florida. And that to Florida. Happened because I had 4 horses in training for Jill Irving in Germany. And quite rightly so, she said after a while, geez, I don't see them often enough. You know, I can't get over there. Would you consider bringing them over for a season to Florida? Which I did. That was, I think, 2011 or 2012. And there were young horses and middle horses. I know there was two horses just starting pre-St. George. And I brought her over Degas at the same time, helped her get going on Degas herself. I had shown Degas small tour in Europe very successfully. And again, loved watching her take Degas through to Grand Prix together with Ashley. And you know, he's a mainstay for the Canadian team right now.
Yeah.
Anton was another horse that came through our German barn, and it just clicked with Belinda and she took him back to Canada. He was going as a 5-6-year-old with us in Germany. And again, with clinics, Belinda was able to train him all the way through to Grand Prix. That was her first horse that she brought to Grand Prix, basically by herself with help in clinic form, as you do it with your horse now. Yeah. And look what a career he had. So, and there were, of course, many other ones, but this is the pleasure of being able to stand by a rider and help them over a period of years get over the difficult things and end up where they wanted to go or where the horse can take you. Or you find somewhere along the way not that good. And then I think it's important for the coach to be able to say, look, before you ride bad Grand Prix forever, drop him into a slot where he's really comfortable and where he can do a great job. That's not the news everybody wants to hear, but when it is necessary, you have to have enough backbone to stand up for the horse and say, look, he's unhappy. He's not good at this. Drop him into a slot that he can be really good at.
Yeah, I think that's an important quality to have in your coach, to be honest and to look after the horse, first of all. And not the rider's whims and want and
exactly.
all of those things.
You have to stand by them. And I've never had a problem with it, actually, because I think if you're rooted, you have to be rooted in truth to a certain degree to get anywhere yourself. And when you can help another person to make some of those decisions when the time comes, it's perhaps the most important thing you can do.
Yeah, interesting. Good point. So I know that now you're being pretty involved in building systems in Canada to improve the coaching and giving advice. So maybe you can give a little bit of a talk about, you know, what is the situation in our country? Where should it be? How do we get there? That kind of thing.
Okay. Well, I'm really quite enthusiastic about my connection to Ontario Equestrian now. they've been a super group and very open to more activity like clinics and training camps. And we'll see more of that, of course. That is where we felt the pandemic the largest, because we were ready to launch this spring and then everything had to be shut down. But it will start up in late summer and fall, I presume, the wonderful plans. And even now, the GRIT team, which are our young riders that are in the GRIT program, are still getting weekly webinars. They're getting fitness program set up. They had a wonderful webinar 2 weeks ago with a veterinarian from Guelph who was explaining how to bring horses back after they'd been laid off for a while, because a lot of these kids couldn't even get into their barns to move them. So they were turned out, basically. So there's a lot that is in my memory, what I used to get out of a very good pony club, which apparently may or may not be the same kind of function today. But if OE and our federations are filling that gap, then the importance is still that our young people do not just become riders and competitive riders, but that they become horse people, horsemen, horsewomen, that they know what to look for in the legs, in the feet, in whatever. There's too much. I run to the barn, the horse is tacked up, the student is on, they jump off, they run off. Of course they're busy, but where do you develop the horsemanship in that scenario? So you have to find a nice base. The only last thing I want to take the opportunity to talk about a little bit is dressage today. Of course, there's been progress on all fronts, but I think the FEI has really taken a step back with the removal of the collective marks in the test situation. I've been watching all kinds of classes over the last couple of years, and you can really see a change in the positioning of horses now that the collective marks have out. What I mean by that is the collective marks were very important for all the reasons you go out and buy, try and find a good moving horse with relaxation, with balance, and so on. But I think the task for the judges now is too hard, because they have to take what they would give in the collective marks and burst little bits and pieces in every mark. But they're so busy looking to movement, which is where the difference used to be. If you rode the changes clean, you got a mark for being clean. But now they're supposed to add whether the canter round, whether it was the expression and the relaxation, was that, how take that into one mark? Pretty hard to do. And therefore, I have a feeling what's happened, what I saw happening in Florida, let's say, is that you could get a brilliant and he would get three, he'd maybe had a mistake or two. You would get a really, I don't want to say careful, but a totally different type of mover that basically was carrying out the exercises but didn't have the quality in the gates. And he could get a 71 because it was totally clean through everything. Do you see where I'm getting at?
I'm just thinking about it a moment. But
I don't want to give examples because it's not fair to pick horses out of tests. But I'm saying there are, think of some of the crossbreds you see now and then. They suddenly can PFE-er. Think of Frisians, Irish drafts, etc. Suddenly you get one of these animals and they can really PFE-er a passagier. But although the legs are coming off the ground incredibly, it's not what I'd call a classic swinging of the back or anything like that. Now, where are they going to separate the marks if the horse does his 12 to 15 steps right on the spot? That's gone with the collective marks.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's becoming even more difficult because every judge has to sift through this for himself. And some of them would like to put more emphasis here or more emphasis on that.
Yeah, I think it becomes complicated when you can't just say, you know, when in those collective marks, they said, well, you can point. I think it was good for a rider to look at those collective marks and think, where is the hole in my training? Because the judge was able to just nail it, right? Or, you know, and to put a mark and put a comment saying,
you're right.
Here's the problem, right? Whereas
get a comment.
Beautiful,
canter work, okay. Walk, terrible. That's where it was said, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
And now that's gone. And it's very difficult to talk about the gates within exercise and then still decide whether it was actually done on the spot from here to there, especially with the higher tests.
Yeah. Too many factors going into, you know, giving, you know, having to give one mark.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I've talked. Monica Tedesco, lots of top experts, and I didn't find one that said we think the judging has gotten better under the system. So that, I mean, nothing is carved forever. The FEI may have to rethink that. There's lots of things going on that perhaps are not in the best interest of dressage, but are in the interest of faster tests and more spectacular judging. But, you know, there's got to be, somebody has got to stand up for, this is the sport that always was this way. Don't take the classic out of the classic system.
Well said. Well said. I think that's great. Well, Chrysalotte, we want to thank you so much for coming on our show. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, a pleasure to hear about, you know, your career and your thoughts on training and horses. And for us, I think it's been really, for me anyways, it's been really fun. And we really appreciate your time.
No problem. I'm happy to do it. It's such a detailed thing. Everybody spends so, does their best. And the more knowledge you have, the easier it is to channel it in the right direction. I wish all the riders and trainers that are listening the best of luck. And if I can help in any way, that's my ongoing job evermore.
So maybe you can tell us now is a good opportunity. How would somebody get in contact with you if they wanted to do that?
Well, they can Google me anytime, whatever. But I think Ontario Equestrian is probably the best source. They have my numbers and my contacts and
Facebook is good. You're on Facebook, right?
I don't personally do anything on Facebook. I was on Facebook, but I found it was took too long, and I didn't really want to bog down in the she said, you said, this argument, that argument, because I don't like listening to non-experts. They have the right to express their opinion, but I don't necessarily want to spend the time with it. And
good
so
point.
I save my time for other things. If I really want to watch some news or do something, I will go looking for that item. But Facebook for me was too blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
All right. Well, if somebody needs you, they can email me or
but I'm, yeah, I've
got,
I'm on.
I've got your contacts.
I'm all over the place. Otherwise, people can get me if they want me. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Fantastic. Okay. Thank you so much, Chrysalotte. Well, Phil, as always, we love the Total Saddle Fit products. They're a great company. Justin from Total Saddle Fit is fantastic. Great girths, fantastic stability stirrup leathers. So, Phil, tell us a little bit about what you're thinking.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, we were talking before that, you know, we've got to get Justin back on the show. I mean, maybe he could answer some listener questions if people want to submit them, or we can talk about, he's always coming up with new innovative products. So, so let's see if we can shoot him an email and get him on the show. Send us your,
I would love that.
Send us your saddle fit questions or, you know, about his products or about what's going on with your saddle if you got a question, and we'll get going with that.
I love it. Fantastic. Well, as always, totalsaddlefit.com is a fantastic company, and we love their products and love the stability stirrup leathers. So as always, touch base with Justin, and he'd love to hear from you. So Phil, for our Total Saddle Fit tip of the week, we've got a great group. We have Charlotte Yorst. She's one of our favorite guests. She's absolutely lovely. And Dave Find, and they're going to talk about a webinar that they're doing together.
This week's dressage training tip is brought to you by Total Saddle Fit, home of the shoulder relief girth at totalsaddlefit.com.
Well, tonight on the Dressage Radio Show, we are so privileged to have International Grand Prix competitor for the United States, Charlotte Yorst, one of our favorite guests on the show, along with David Thind. He is competed in Grand Prix dressage and show jumping, awarded the German Trainer A license in 2007, equestrian biomechanics expert and authorized teacher of the Feldenkrais Awareness Through Movement. Welcome to you both, Dave and Charlotte. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. We're so excited to be here. It's always so much fun.
Well, we love it. And what you both have been working on works so well into kind of what we've been trying to embody here on the Dressage Radio Show during quarantine. You both have been working on a great series of webinars. And I listened today, Cleaning Tack. It was fantastic. Dave, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the program you have going?
Absolutely. So thank you again for having me and Charlotte. We're really happy to be here. And in terms of the webinar, the program that I have going, so Charlotte helped me with gave a couple of webinars. And the first one, the topic was basically to talk about the classical seat. And I thought, okay, well, let me ask one of my old trainers, who I thought was very knowledgeable, Johann Zagers from Germany. I always love talking with him about this subject. And he's quite the expert. He's brought riders to the Olympics. So he really knows what he's doing. And for myself, that's my main work. I work with the biomechanics of riders using my own method. But I did study the Feldenkrais method now for 4 years officially. But I've been using that method for close to 20 years. So for those who are not aware, it's a way of retraining our bodies and our minds to have better movement. So more youthful movement, more supple movement, more coordinated movement. So a lot of the things we need in our daily lives and in our dressage riding. And the reason I asked Charlotte to join me on the webinar is, as many of you know, she only started riding at age 35. So when I address, you know, large groups, I think it's important to realize that, you know, the adult amateurs or possibly new beginner riders, they don't want to feel that they can't relate in the sense that they can't dream to be somewhere where they see someone that looks very far away. And, you know, watching Charlotte ride, no one would ever think that she started to ride at age 35. She looks like she's had a lot of seat lessons. She looks like she started on ponies, you know, everything one would expect from a very highly developed rider who started early. I myself was shocked when I met Charlotte, and I thought, okay, more people need to know this story because I think she can really motivate people. So that's why I asked her to be on that webinar with me. And so many people wrote to say that they were inspired by her story, that they loved hearing about her, they watched her ride, and they love her riding. And for those who know her, she's just such a positive, uplifting person. I think we had a great time.
Well, then I'm going to just jump in and ask Charlotte how she feels about being an inspiration, and, you know, where did her inspiration come from in learning to ride a little bit later in life, and just to give us a little bit of that story. I think that's good, would be good for our listeners.
You know, I have loved this journey, and I think it's so important that you, as a person, you always try to live the best life and be the best person that you can be, like every single day of your life. And sometimes people ask me, are you in a midlife crisis? And I'm like, yes, I am. I'm always in a crisis because I don't want to be the person I was yesterday. I want to grow and I want to be, I want to be a new person. I don't want to be the person that I was when I'm 55, when I'm 65 or even 56. I want to be a new person and I want to grow and I want to see the life. I want to test myself if I'm happy, if I'm excited about what I'm doing and if I'm proud of my life. And I just think it's so important that you continue to do that all your life. And a lot of times, you know, people say, you know, he died when he was 25 and we buried him when he was 75. And I just don't want to be that person. So I have spent this time to develop alongside with David. You know, he says that it is really body and mind. And he helps me a lot with that. I think we have a lot of the same feelings about how we can continue to develop ourselves. And Feldenkrais is one of them. And then I just continue to grow in my mind and read and have spent this time doing all of that and spreading the joy of getting a break like this is a little bit, where you can say, okay, who do I really want to be and how do I want to grow? And this writing has just been incredible for me to do that and become a completely different person than I was even, you know, last year or the year before. Or it's incredible. It's so much fun.
Yeah. And you're just an inspiration. You always, whenever I see you, make a smile and truly your journey with your horses, they're so happy and healthy. And it's just amazing to see. So Dave, tell us a little bit about your method, because I've been on your website and I listened to the webinar. It's really cool. There's lots of information there. So tell us a little bit about your method and what you've been working on.
Sure. The reason it has my name on it and not just, you know, Feldenkrais for riders, because that's what the majority of the work is. But, you know, unlike some other practitioners that work in Feldenkrais, you know, you could have someone that works with just about any sport, works with children, works with seniors. There are several of us actually that work, who've studied Feldenkrais and work with riders. But my other work is I'm a trainer. And, you know, the two go pretty much together hand in hand. We're educating bodies. So whether it's the horse's nervous system of how the horse should move ideally, comfortably, well, soundly, happily, all those things every trainer in the whole world is thinking about all the time. So I just happen to have some more tools learning through the Feldenkrais way of educating and learning, because that's what it really is. It's a educational system. One of his famous quotes was, I will be your last teacher, not because I'm your best teacher, but because for me, you will learn to learn. So that is what I am offering my riders or students who take my online courses. I have pre-recorded courses for riders to improve their riding from home. So I've been doing this for a couple of years now, but of course, there's a lot more people who want to do this because they're at home. And I have to say, making something positive about this is that even if you are riding, you can improve. But if you're not riding, you actually stand the chance to improve more because you're out of your daily habits. You know, you're exploring movements, not specifically as a rider, but just as a human. So we do very gentle, small movements to learn through experience, not by reading a book and saying, well, this is the right way or that's the wrong way. So a typical lesson would mean that we have specific biomechanically correct movements. And I hate to say biomechanically correct because it sounds like we're a robot in a way, but movements that just make sense to the nervous system, things that are related. So if you're turning, rolling the head or moving the shoulders or the pelvis, and, you know, various options. So it's very unlike, you know, anything that would teach you posture. So this is about spontaneously being able to move. And we rehearse it under very gentle, soft movements in a perfect environment where you're comfortable, you're not riding, you're not being disturbed. And then when you go ride and you're in action, it's not slow motion anymore. Everything comes relatively quickly, but as if it's natural for you. So that's where the point in doing all this slow motion movement is. Dr. Feldenkrais himself was a martial artist, and he was interested in spontaneously being able to, from a middle balanced place, able to act in any direction you want and to come back to your middle. So that's not so different from our posture, a riding seat, your position, or however you'd like to call it. And I think the other interesting thing is, of course, in this day and age, people are concerned with their levels of anxiety, with reason, of course. And within the Feldenkrais method, we learn to regulate this through our breathing, through noticing what are the different things that activate the parasympathetic, the sympathetic. And these two elements actually are not mutually exclusive. So one could think, well, I'm totally relaxed, so I can't react to something that comes by surprise. Or you ride a very lazy horse and you need to be a little bit more awake so the horse can follow you. So just having more control over that would help us in our daily lives, of course, but also in our riding. And that's what I hope to do with my courses. And people, I'm having a lot of fun, a lot of US-based riders, Canada-based riders, but really riders from all over the world, taking part in either my live Zoom classes, which I'm having. This is new. I used to only offer the recorded classes or private live classes. I decided to offer groups of 25 or 24 with me as a teacher, mostly because only 24 fit on the page in Zoom, and I want to be able to really see people and make it a community event where people feel that they're part of a group. They get to know each other. I think people really miss interacting with their fellow riders. And, if you can't go to the barn or attend a clinic, it's not exactly the same, but learning as a group, that camaraderie and realizing that other people struggle with the same issues and, just having a place to come to learn and be part of a group. And I'm having a lot of fun, of course, teaching in general, but providing that venue, which I think is much needed right now. So I'm very grateful for that opportunity.
So Charlotte, tell us, what are you doing for yourself with your horses and your fitness while we're in quarantine? What are some things that you've been working on?
For me, habits and rituals and creating good situations for yourself, it's just paramount. And I brought all my horses to Reno. First of all, I think getting a break from what you usually do is usually a good thing, because you get to really think about how you can handle this differently. Is there a better way of doing it? And obviously I have been really traveling with the horses all over the world. I've been in Europe every summer. I've been in Florida every winter. So getting all my horses together in Reno and being able to rethink all my habits and rituals and how I keep myself motivated through this has been a huge learning experience for me again, So I'm really enjoying having all the horses here, and I try to stay with everything. I get up in the morning, I make a plan for what I'm going to do with each horse. And then I go to the barn and every horse gets ridden. I've also set up an online learning system in Reno with PCM that follows me. And I have my trainer, Mary Myers. I had two lessons this morning. I started at 8 o'clock and then I had a lesson at 9 o'clock, and we're going to do it again on Sunday. And that's extremely helpful. Then I have started my 4-year-old horse, that Vivian, that I had somebody else ride, but now I ride her. And Nintendo is getting a bit of a break, so I just walk him for 30 minutes every day, but really staying with my routine. And then my grandchild is at the ranch, I see him, I go home, mm-hmm. I swim 80 laps in my pool, and then I have the time in the evening to hang with my family, and we usually have dinner. But creating sometimes I'm not motivated, especially when it's like pouring rain or it's been snowing here. And you know, it's tough to get out there and ride because I don't have an indoor arena. And sometimes I'm freezing and I'm cold and everything. But creating really these habits and rituals, you know, then you are at the barn and you get warm as you ride each horse and everything. Then you stick with the plan. So I'm actually feeling that my horses are progressing tremendously. They are loving the green grass now. They're getting turnouts. And so we all live a little differently, but it's not worse. It's actually in many ways better. And it just has given me a breathing room to really kind of reevaluate how everything is. It really something I want to do every summer, go to Europe. Do I really, maybe I want to shorten it a little bit so I can be more with the family or the horses can get more of a rest. And so I feel like these are great times to really think about what you can do. And then I have connected with Dave and we're doing the webinars. We're reaching out to a lot of people and we are working once a week together. And in my situation, it is a little bit mind over matter because starting so late, I mean, I was just, I'm a normal person, you know, I had a normal life before I sat in an office every day. And then all of a sudden I make this huge life change. And in the beginning, I bought a trailer and I was trailering around my horses to a little shows myself. And I just worked my way up. So going back to some of those habits and going back to basics and just working on yourself and your horses. And I mean, I really enjoyed it.
Charlotte, I was going to ask you, because I'm a bit of a fan. I think we're friends on Facebook or whatever, but you've got a very beautiful young stallion, yes. Grand Galaxy. How was he doing? How did he adjust from coming over from Europe? And does he remind you of Vitalis at all? Or, you know, because that was another really awesome young stallion that you owned and rode and trained and.
Yeah, he's definitely not like Vitalis at all. He came to Reno, and I have a really good story about him. I came to Reno, and he was crazy because they all are. He had never been, you know, he's always been in a 10x10 stall at Hellstrand. That's where he has lived his whole life. And I bring him to Reno, and it's all open. Everything is open. I don't have a fence around my arena. All the stalls are open. The horses can touch. There was the newborn foal and three two-year-olds and Vivian, which is a four-year-old mare. And everybody's out and looking at each other, and they live in these outdoor sheds. So he was insane when he came. I mean, completely crazy. I mean, the penis was out 24/7, and he's like whinnying and everything. And I am like, oh my God, this, I don't know how I'm going to get on him. So in the beginning, my groom would like walk me up to the arena, and then I would ride. And some days he didn't even want to go somewhere because he was so stallion-y. And then he actually pretty quickly adopted and hands, I mean, so good for him to be. Now he's just insanely beautiful. But then the other day, I was up riding him and he's doing fantastic. And he's actually very calm and sweet now, which is incredible because he still sees all the mares and the little foal every day. And he just moseys around and loves and all of them. But the other day, Vivian got loose from my groom and I came down from the arena and came into the stall. And there is Vivian in full on heat running towards him with her bridle between her legs. Oh. And just, I don't know how she got away, but she did. And she didn't really want to, you know how it is. They run 20 meters and then they stop. But she was running and he's coming. And he just went a little bit. And then he moseyed right back into a cross. I thought I was going to die. I'm like, okay, this is where my life ends.
This is it.
My world.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is it. Goodbye, world. So I have my little excitement too. I have to imagine, admit I was a little weak in the knees when I got off, but he was perfect. So he has had a huge adjustment from being inside 24/7 in a 10x10 to be outside with all the other horses, being able to touch and feel and having mares running at him, foals being there and everything. So it's been incredible for him, but he has adjusted and now he turns out perfectly. He touches the other horses. So it's been a great experience for me with that horse.
It's everybody right now is adjusting. That's what we say. Life is just, it's a challenge for everyone, no matter what you're doing, I love it. Well, yeah. So Dave, can you tell us a little bit about the webinars? How can we find the webinars? Give us some information about them.
Yes, absolutely. Well, probably the easiest, the quickest way is just to put in my name, Dave Thind Method, THIND. Into YouTube and several stuff should show up. Or if you go to my website, davethindmethod.com, underneath the resources section, you'll find some links to some of the webinars where you can do. And the part two of the webinar that Charlotte was involved with, I gave a full class actually entitled Find Your Seat Bones and Vertical Alignment. So it was a introductory Feldenkrais for Riders class. And I led people through these movements, so those that attended, and the results were amazing. I was very, very happy with, all the comments from everyone and a lot of emails after. And of course, a lot of people signed up for my classes. And I want to say that about 150 people were on that call. And at least, so I have two groups that right now started from there and a third one. So almost half of those people have signed up for courses. And these were not particularly people I was already working with. So with all these changing times, I'm also doing a lot more work at the barn myself. I'm lucky enough to live on my farm. So in between, doing all of this, either group online teaching or private sessions, I still have my wonderful horses to ride. And, we pretty much shut down the farm. We've slowly started to open up where people can come in and ride with, the necessary precautions. But I have a lot more work. So like Charlotte, I'm waking up early. I'm doing barn chores.
I think we're there.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's so funny when you start reaching out and you start working when you keep your good habits up, how life just kind of sorts itself out.
It's true, absolutely. Isn't it?
And I have to say one thing though, so amazing for me. And every time I've had the chance to do this type of extra, I'm the one who does night check every night. I love night check. Why I stopped doing it when I have staff to do, I don't know. I really love that special quiet time. There's nothing like it for me, just to be with the horses and really appreciate their individual characters and take the time to actually make them feel that they're cared for and noticed as individuals. Because I think that with, very busy training barns, that's not something that I've ever really wanted to run. I have 28 stalls here, but I have always only kept one barn open, just because I think that for me personally, I really want that individual time with the horses and to recognize them as individuals and give them their individual care and ride them that way and make them feel listened to and cared for. I myself am not able to handle, a large number. And, in situations like this, when I don't have the staff that I'm used to, I'm able to handle it pretty much on my own with the caring, and I have someone to help me do the stalls. But, other than that, I have some help with turnout in the afternoon. But it's really funny that I laugh and say, it's a bit like having a working student position again. I have to run around all day, literally from paddock to paddock, run this way, run that way, run back to my office to give an online lesson, run back down, ride a horse. But it's getting me in shape and I feel really good, actually. Love being outside all the time. I love that I'm able to go in and work in my home office. So I'm not so sure how much I want things to be different after all this is over, to be quite honest. I really am enjoying having the time with my horses, riding more, and, you know, just being really efficient. I'm having a great time.
Yeah, no, I think it's so true. I think, and that's one of the things that we've, you know, depending on where you are, you sort of have to make the best of it. And I'm in the same boat here in my stable. You know, I live also on the property. So it's been the same way. It's been lovely to actually, you know, there's nowhere to go. So I can go out and hand graze a horse in the evening or just spend some special time with them, which has been fantastic. Well, Dave, if you could one more time, give us your information. And then Charlotte, if you could follow with how our listeners can find you online if they have any questions.
Yes,
you can email me at charlottejorst@gmail.com or message me via my Facebook or just ask me on Facebook. I'm pretty much on all the time and I show updates on all my beautiful horses and the habits and rituals that I try to keep up and I'm always available. I love the horses and I love this community. I love everything about it. So I'm always there.
I love it. And I've loved seeing baby Vivian grow up. That's been really fun. So
her canter is just amazing. I'm posting a video of her soon.
I'm also a fan. So I will definitely like it as well. Dave, one more time. How can we find you online?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I first would love to say that I love that Charlotte is so open to the whole community and being accessible. And I'd like to echo that and say that, you know, you can email me personally, dave@aspirefarm, that's aspirefarm.com. Myself, my personal profile on Facebook, Dave Thind Method on Facebook. Or through my webpage. So any way you wish to reach me. And what I would like to say is that if you're a rider that you're not sure whether this type of work, my program or Feldenkrais in general, like I said, there's lots of really good, talented Feldenkrais practitioners that work with riders specifically. So I would encourage everybody. So the reason I told that story earlier about how many people went on to get more involved in this after trying it, please try it. You know, so I have that actual class, the vertical alignment seat bone class on my website. If you try it, it takes 45 minutes. If you're undisturbed by, you know, children, animals, and you actually give it a try, I would be shocked if you don't feel a difference. You know, as riders in particular, I think we have that knack for feeling. So please try that.
And if you, amazing. I have had such great experience with it. It's been so great.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for coming on the show. Well, I'm going to check it out myself. And I also enjoyed the webinar. So thank you both. And we look forward to touching base with you soon. As always, we love email and Facebook shout outs. Keep them coming. And we especially like the workout ones because we get a laugh out of them and we're feeling the same way. So keep them up. Yeah, we love the workout.
We can share in the pain.
We'll share in the pain and we will not use your name but Phil and I will laugh with you. So keep it up. We love it. We hope we're adding a little bit of sunshine to your week in quarantine and wherever you are and how things are going. So as always, you can find our show notes and links to today's guests on our website, dressageradio.com. Like us on Facebook, just search Dressage Radio Show. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. My website is maplecrestfarmky.com and my email is reese@horseradionetwork.com.
The best way to find me is probably through Facebook or my email is philip@horseradionetwork.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors for allowing us to put on a show. And don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
Everybody, keep your heels down, your shoulders back, and stay safe and well for us. And we look forward to talking with you next week.